Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Friday before Christmas. Many people are getting ready to travel to see friends, family, and loved ones for the upcoming holiday. And WDIO-TV meteorologist Dan Romano stopped by the KUWS studios this week to fill us in on any snow or cold that's headed this way this weekend. He also shared his predictions on how this winter will stack up against the last few we've seen in northern Minnesota and Wisconsin. So first off, holiday travel. We're hearing lots about snow on the way or a big cold front. What can we expect through Christmas Day?
Well, I think more than anything else, I think we're going to see extremely cold weather, probably our coldest weather of the season so far, especially Christmas morning. So we'll see highs this weekend, temperatures in the single digits during the day, and then dropping down at some points into the teens and 20s below zero.
So this is really going to ruin my Bentleyville experience.
Unfortunately, it will. Yes, it will totally ruin your Bentleyville experience. If anything, it'll give you more of a reason to put a little something extra in your hot cocoa, because at least they give away the hot cocoa at Bentleyville.
Yeah, it'll really, you know, brighten up those lights.
Exactly. Yes.
a little extra twinkle in everyone's eye.
Sure. And then you'll get a couple more s'mores out of it. I think it's a win-win all the way around. Yeah.
Well, maybe it'll make it easier to stand the crowds, because I'm sure people will still be lining up to see it.
There's one thing that I've noticed about the Minnesota and Wisconsin folk around here is they're a hearty bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I forecast temperatures, you know, low temperatures into the teens, 20s below zero, and everybody's like, it'll be good for the ice.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, what a difference.
Don't even grab the mitts until it's 20 below.
Exactly, yeah. There's a potential that we could see a period of about 48 to 60 consecutive hours of below zero weather. So Christmas Day and the day after Christmas, there is a potential that the thermometer may not climb above zero.
Mm.
I mean, that the thought of that itself is numbing.
Yeah.
In more ways than one. And still people up here are just like, meh, we need to get that ice on the lakes out there.
So may not be able to escape outside from their family gatherings.
If anything, yeah, we're going to have some fun Christmas experiences. I'm sure we're going to get some of those rogue videos sent in.
Oh, yeah. Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah.
Well, okay, beyond that, Mr. Romano, what are your predictions for this winter season? What are we going to see?
You know, I'm a bit biased. And when I say that, it's only because where I'm from, I'm used to winter, and not here, even though I've been here for 6 years now, the Minnesota-Wisconsin winter. It's still a struggle for me. So the last three winters that we have received have been relatively docile, tame, compared to what most folks up here are accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I don't think that that's going to happen again. I don't think it's going to be as crazy as the two previous winters, where one we had in the top five as one of the coldest winters. I don't want to say top five, but it was very cold for a very long time. And then the winter after that, where we had our snowiest winter on record. In fact, we broke the all-time snowiest month on record, and that was 4 years ago that April. So we're talking about the winter of 2013-2014. That April was a very, very rough one. I think we saw almost 50 inches of snow alone just that month.
I remember that.
Yes. So we had snow in May, as a matter of fact. And over at Northland, they actually had to move their baseball games out of town because there was 18 inches of snow weekend in May. So I don't know if it's going to be, I don't want to use the term catastrophic, but I don't think it's going to be as chaotic as that winter was. But I think you're going to see more of the regular winter that most folk up here are accustomed to. I think that we're going to see over 100 inches of snow. And I think that on average, when everything shapes up, I think temperatures will be pretty average. I know December has been slightly below average, but November was slightly above average.
I was going to say that. I thought I saw that we've gotten more snow than normal so far.
We are right on par. This time of year, we should see about 27 inches of snow. We have received just, maybe a little bit more than that. So we're slightly above average. So we've seen a little over 30, almost 36 inches of snow at this point. And we should be right around close to 30 at this point. But going back to the last 3-4 years, we've been pretty much on par, if not slightly above the pace. However, 5 years ago, we saw a lot of snow early in that winter, and then it kind of fizzled off. I think this year we'll see a little bit more snow consistently all the way through.
So if we see a little bit more snow this year, does that mean that it might not get as cold? Are we going to see a little bit warmer temperatures?
Well, you know, as far as the dynamics go, you know, we haven't seen any big storms so far. We've had a clipper roll through, and that dropped, you know, 10 inches of snow. And that also kicked up a lot of those large waves and did a lot of damage to parts of the lake walk over in Duluth. And, you know, around even here in Superior, one of the piers got busted up pretty good.
Yeah.
But overall, we haven't had those big, massive storms kind of roll through here so far. Ones that kind of come out of Colorado, sweep through the upper Midwest, and dump, you know, 1 to 2 feet of snow. We haven't seen that yet. Now, the reason we haven't seen that yet has to do with the way that the pattern is shaping up. And so far, as of the past 3 weeks, we've seen basically a lot of our storm systems move through at a fairly quick pace, but they've come from Alberta. They're commonly known as Alberta Clippers.
Right.
And they are fast-moving storm systems that roll through, you know, at about 12, 18 hours, drop a couple inches, and then move on. The thing is, with those storms, they also tend to have a lot of cold air associated with them because they, too, are coming from northern Canada. So it creates this almost like a funnel of just, you know, storm system, shot of cold air, storm system, shot of cold air. And that's what we have seen, you know, over the past 3 weeks or so. So until that dynamic changes, then we'll start to see some warmer air getting pumped into our area. And unfortunately, these patterns kind of set up for weeks and weeks at a time. Actually, a few years ago, one of the reasons why it was so cold 5 years ago was because we were stuck in that pattern for months, for a good chunk of the latter half of the winter, where it just seemed like it was cold through February, March, and April, and we still had ice on the lake. So That's, we're going to try to shake out of that pattern. Hopefully, I have my fingers crossed, but it looks like that this pattern could be around for a little bit and at least a week or two. And then fortunately, it takes one of those big storm systems out of Colorado to really change that pattern, bust it up.
Okay. Well, is anything else playing a role? Like, are we seeing any El Nino or La Nina influences?
We have a little bit of a La Nina impact, or that we could see a little bit of a La Nina impact, but I don't think that it will be enough to really throw our entire weather pattern into a kink. I think what that means is we'll see a little bit more of a winter that most folks are accustomed to, where we'll see temperatures at times slightly below average, and at the same time, we'll see a little bit more snowfall than average. Keep in mind, you know, we average about 90 inches of snowfall a year. So when I say we'll see a little bit more than average, I'm thinking maybe somewhere between 100 to 120 inches of snow. And and right now, we're kind of on that pace. I mean, if you look at it through the two-thirds of the way through December, we're talking pretty close to 3 feet of snow. So if you expand that out, I'd say another – let's see, it's January, February, March, April. Yeah, we're talking about 120 inches of snow.
So pretty good winter then for the outdoor sports, like cross-country skiing and snowmobiling and skiing, all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, again, I know a lot of folks out there are kind of looking forward to that, like, big dumping of a snow where we can get, 1 to 2 feet to really lay a good solid foundation. I think right now, if we don't see a lot of melting where we just kind of get these quick-hitting snowstorms that really just
slap you in the face.
Yeah, a bit. Yeah, yeah, that's the truth. Yeah, and slowly but surely build on that base. That I don't think too many people are going to be complaining about that. You know, as far as the snow sticking around for the outdoor sports.
Well, how long is it going to stick around, though? Please tell me we're not going to have snow in May.
Well, that's the struggle. You know, the good thing is usually patterns that are shaping up like they are right now, they don't tend to last for, you know, 5, 6, 7 months at a time. So, you know, a pattern like this that is shaping up for the early half of winter doesn't tend to lead to the same pattern towards the end of winter. So it's more of a, you know, 2 to 3 month pattern at the very longest. But a lot of things can change. Lake Superior plays a massive role in how the weather will be here in April and May. Now, there's a couple things that we're looking at. My boss, Chief Meteorologist Justin Lyles, he found a not an analogy, but a comparison between the lake height and the amount of snow that we receive. And I don't know if you've, you know, I don't know how many people out there are that much of a Lake Superior enthusiast, but we are, you know.
Seem pretty high levels.
We are near record high levels of, you know, depth in the lake. I think we're somewhere around 603 feet right now. And the last 2 or 3 winters when it has been this high has led to large amounts of snow. Still not exactly sure how that works out. I mean, that's kind of, I could understand that trend in and around Lake Superior because you have a little bit more moisture to work with. When it's that high, it takes a little bit longer to freeze over. However, in this case, we may see the lake freeze over a little bit earlier because it's so cold early in the season. Now, at the same time, we haven't really been dealing with any lake effect snow here in Duluth, and that's something that we could be watching, especially as winds switch from out of the northeast this time of year because it has been so cold.
Well, anything else you want to add for your winter prediction?
Whew. You know, I don't think, you know, I, as far as the lake goes, I think that we may see a little bit more ice this year on the lake than we have seen for the past maybe two years. The last 2 years, we haven't really seen that much. The year before that, we had a lot of ice on the lake, but it was more of a carryover from the previous winter where the lake was frozen over. 90-some percent
right.
of the lake was frozen over.
Are we going to see that much or no?
No, I don't think we'll see that much. My concern is the fact that we'll have a lot of ice on there early on, and that tends to lead to a cooler summer. And that's something that I actually miss. This past summer was a little bit cooler than I thought it was going to be. And I think that because of that, the lake didn't get as warm as it could have been. And so going into this next summer, you know, you're talking about April and May, because the lake may freeze over a little bit early, it may be a little bit colder in some locations. The air around Lake Superior, the towns around Lake Superior, may be dealing with a little bit of a foggy and a cooler spring than maybe you would like. Just may not see as much snow.
Maybe you just need to take the plunge right now so you can prepare yourself for later on in the season, Dan.
Well, that could be true. But I did go for a nice little plunge in November.
Did you?
Yeah. So that was interesting. And then at that time, the lake temperature was 44 degrees. So that was cold enough for me. Although I've done the polar plunge before, I may do it again this year. We'll see how my cards shake out.
Brisk.
That's brisk, baby. That's exactly right.
Are you going home for Christmas?
No, I am not going home for Christmas.
So viewers will be able to see you on their television sets?
As a matter of fact, I will be working Christmas Eve night, 10 o'clock news, and then also I will be waking up folks Christmas morning. Yes.
Well, I will raise a glass to you from my cozy couch.
All right. That'll be awesome. I don't know what's in that glass, but I can only imagine.
Well, I won't be working, so anything could happen.
That's true. Very true.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate you coming in.
This is awesome. Thank you very much.
Again, that was WDIO-TV meteorologist Dan Romano talking about his expectations for cold and snow this winter. Coming up after the break, author Julie Buckles talks about some of her picks for books to read over the holiday. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you all with us on this Friday before Christmas. Julie Buckles is the author of Paddling to Winter, which is about her 1,700-mile canoe journey from Lake Superior to northern Saskatchewan. She lives on the south shore of Lake Superior with her husband, two kids, and kennel full of Siberian huskies. She's spoken with me yesterday by phone on her picks for books to read for those who have a chance to wind down over the holidays. What do you have on your list, Julie?
Well, it's been a really fun year for cookbooks. And even as the country, apparently, according to statistics, cooks less and less at home, the sale of cookbooks are through the roof. And I don't know if people have been catching, there's best lists and the 10 best cookbooks of the Midwest and the 10 best cookbooks in the country, and New York Times puts out their list and Star Tribune put out their list. And I have to say, I'm also just seduced by, I do cook a lot, but I'm also just seduced by the stories around the cookbooks. And so I'll talk about two that I think are just fantastic, and they're regional and have so much more than recipes. And I think that's kind of the big thing with cookbooks is, if you remember, like Water for Chocolate, you know, it was this really rich, seductive narrative. And then included were little recipes. And I think that's the type of cookbooks we're looking at now, which is the story behind the food and around the food comes together with recipes that, if you do cook, you could make, and if you don't, you can just enjoy the stories and the photographs. In the case of Mary Doherty, who is a resident of Bayfield and also a very, very good friend of mine, and she did a cookbook through Wisconsin Historical Press that came out in September, I believe. It's called Life in a Northern Town, and what she does is really blends together her passions, which are dogs and children and Lake Superior. And she's also an incredible photographer. And I think the cookbook really came out of, she has a blog, and she was blogging about kind of her life in a northern town, so it's perfectly titled. And as she was going along, she was growing a readership, and Wisconsin Historical Press just became very interested in that kind of story of how you tell the story of a community through food. And so Mary went around and really interviewed people in the region and, you know, the fifth generation of meat producers, cattle producers, you know, the people who fish, commercial fish, the lake, and really kind of put some depth behind the ingredients in her recipes and kind of the story around how she discovered the recipe, how she started to make the recipe. And she really is a nut about food. And so the recommendations I'm going to give today are books that I'm giving out as gifts because okay. I believe in them that much. I think I've bought almost 10 copies of Life in a Northern Town for people around the country because I see it as such a great way to show off this region. You can get it, read it, maybe make some recipes out of it. Great gift. You couldn't get a better gift. And so that's one of them. There's another cookbook that came out that I have not read yet, but I've bought as a gift, and I'm not going to tell you who is going to get it, but it's the Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, and that is by Sean Sherman and Beth Dooley. And Beth Dooley has a strong connection to this region. She's a Minneapolis Twin Cities author and food critic, food cook, food writer, and she's done several cookbooks, and one of her others that I can't think of right now is one of my favorites. I use her other cookbooks for my Swedish meatball recipe that I make on Christmas Eve, and so I always go to that every year. But I'm really excited about this book because it's taking Indigenous food and it's talking about the stories behind it and really kind of putting the Indigenous culture at the forefront of this book. And as it said in the promo, there's no fry bread, dairy or sugar. So it's a really good, wholesome food that's a more traditional kind of food. So those are the two cookbooks that I highly recommend for people.
Okay. And I'm just going to interject real quick here because Wisconsin Public Television is starting a project where they're looking at food traditions and exploring expressions of identity through food.
Yeah.
They haven't launched it yet, but they're kind of working to pull together all these different experiences of people across Wisconsin from any tradition they have, whether it's Jewish or Native American or African American, Muslim, all that stuff. So, but I, you know, I didn't know that. I didn't know that cookbooks were kind of growing in popularity this year. What else are you recommending for people?
Well, this is a book that I started out with. It came out in February, and it's more in the mystery detective genre. And it's a fast-paced, I love mysteries, and I love detective kind of books. I don't read them all that often. They're kind, in my mind, they're kind of dessert and a luxury and, you know, something that we would call a quote-unquote beach reading. But I also think probably really good for around the holidays where we're all really distracted and busy. And it's definitely a page-turner, but it's also so appropriate for the holidays because it's so sweet, is August Snow by Stephen Mack Jones. And it's the story of Detroit and about a cop who is no longer on the police force, and he returns home and things happen and he gets involved. But he also has just this very, very big heart. And so you can trust throughout the book that like nothing really, really horrible is going to happen, which is something that's nice for this time of year to be reading. But I can't recommend it enough. It's another book I've given out this year just because I think for anyone, especially who maybe hasn't read a while, and I know there's so many people out here saying, oh, I just can't get to books anymore, and they're doing books on tape. But right. This is really a book that will capture you from the beginning and take you all the way through and will get you back on the road to reading again. So,
what's the name of it again?
It's August Snow, which I love that title as well. And August Snow is the name of the main character. And I'm hoping, and I have, I've become friends with Stephen Mack Jones via Twitter, and he tells me that he is planning this character to continue. So this would be, I think this is his first book, August Snow may continue on into becoming a regular character in future books. And I couldn't have thought of a better name for a character than August Snow. And then in the genre of adventure, again, regional author John Lurie, L-U-R-I-E, wrote a book called Canoeing with Jose. And for all of the listeners here in the Boundary Waters region, they'll be familiar with Canoeing with the Cree, which was by Eric Sevride in the early 1900s, about 1930, where he went from his hometown of Minneapolis and paddled all the way to Hudson Bay, a couple thousand miles. And what John Lurie did a few years ago is he kind of retraced with his own twists that route. It was a dream of his from when he was a young man. At the time of this book, he's divorcing or is divorced. I can't remember the details on that, but he has a couple children. And he's a journalist. So, Danny, as you and I know, journalists write really great books because they're tight and they're shaped and really fast-paced. And what he really does is, while he is a journalist, he is invited to The Circle, which is a Native American paper in Minneapolis, and he meets this to tutor teenagers. And he meets this young man, Jose, who becomes a good friend. And 4 years after they meet, so he's 15 when they meet, when Jose is 19 and John Lurie is in his 30s, they decide to take this journey of Eric Sevride's all the way to Hudson Bay. And what he does that I love with this book is he really tells the story of this kid who has never really been outside of the city. And he tells the story of Eric Sevride writing about this route in a different time period of the 1930s and the way that he talks about the indigenous people of the United States and Canada or ignores. And he because his eyes are so wide open, he really kind of tells a different story, but he's constantly referring back to Eric Sevride and how Eric Sevride wrote about it. So what's great is because my one fear with reading this book was that I would suddenly not like Eric Sevride anymore because Canoeing with the Cree is one of my all-time favorite books. But I didn't end that way. I just ended with a much better understanding of that route and the people there. And I just fell in love with this author and Jose, and so in love that I found him on Instagram. And I wrote and I said, I have to know how Jose is doing. And he wrote back and said he's doing great. He's in environmental landscaping or something like that. So that's a modern world. The wonderful thing is when you finish a book and you fall in love with it, you can find the author somehow. And if they're sweet, they'll write back to you. So
and connect with that character.
Yeah. So Canoeing with Jose, it came out this year in June by Milkweed Press. I think it was released into paperback. I just stumbled across it at a bona fide brick-and-mortar bookstore in Marquette and just had not heard of it before, so I picked it up, looked at it, and thought it looked interesting. And I don't think it's gotten a lot of marketing behind it because I looked for reviews. I haven't really seen much. And so this is going to have to be a word-of-mouth book, and so I'm really happy to here on Wisconsin Public Radio be talking about it because I think it's a book worth picking up and reading for all different types of reasons, to learn more about Native American issues, to learn more about just humanity and our reconnection and disconnection from nature. That all comes through in this really, again, fast-paced kind of adventure book.
Any other genres, too, that you're focusing on or you've been...
Well, the one I'm going to read is in just straight old nonfiction, which is Death and Life of the Great Lakes by Dan Egan.
Oh, I've been meaning to pick that up.
Yes, he's a Milwaukee journalist, a very good one, environmental reporter. And he has written kind of this great book, and I think it's been chosen already by Midwest Sellers Press something organization. Anyway, it's received many awards. It's getting great reviews. I've seen it in the libraries and in bookstore windows. And he is going to be on campus at Northland College in March for World Water Day speaking. But it's about invasive species and the shipping industry and the Great Lakes. So I think that would be great for any of us living here to give that book a read. I can't talk much more about it because I haven't even picked it up yet, but it is on my reading list for January, February. And he will be here March 19th. We're bringing him to Northland College for World Water Day.
Okay. Any other books, or you want to?
Well, in fiction, because I did do Mystery Detective, but I have one more fiction book and/or the movie is Brooklyn, which I'm guessing maybe a lot of people have already seen. I was late to the game. I think that movie came out last year. And I know it's been playing on HBO because my mother at some point told me she had watched it 5 times. And my mother loves sweet, character-driven stories. And so I knew I would love it. And I was home alone over Thanksgiving weekend. And so I think it's on Netflix. Watched it, and I agree. It's really sweet. It's about a Irish young woman who leaves her community and Ireland and comes to Brooklyn and starts a new life. And it's just so subtle in the details of what it's like to leave home and create a new life. And I just loved it to death. And I understand the book is as wonderful. Someone just walked into my office before you called, Danny, and I have it sitting here on my desk and said, "Ah, one of my favorite books." So Brooklyn, whether it's the movie or the book, I think, again, around the holidays, it's just a sweet story and would highly recommend it.
And for those who may just not have the mental energy over the holidays to get into a book, you said it's on Netflix?
It is.
Okay. Anything else you want to add, Julie, before we, you know, head our separate ways for the Christmas holiday?
Well, I've been on the just in the movie theaters. There's a lot of comic book characters coming to life. And because I have an 11-year-old boy, I've been to see most of them. And I can say what they may be lacking, maybe in depth of character, in plot, maybe, is there is such great humor. And I think they provide a great outlet for just having a really good laugh. Thor was a delight, and I had no expectation. And I took my son and his friend, and we wore a 3-day glasses, and I was just prepared just to be there. And I ended up laughing through the whole movie because there's some really solid humor in them, and Justice League as well.
Wasn't as painful as an experience for a parent as you thought.
Exactly. It was really fun. I if you're going to take your kids to movies, those two were really great. And the one movie I am going to make sure that I get to see, because I am dying to see it, is Lady Bird. It's a story about a teenage girl and her mother, and it's gotten great, great buzz and sounds like a very fun and very true story about the dynamic between a mom and daughter. And from what I understand, it's take the whole family. And I've heard a few clips, and with my daughter, who's 14, and we both were laughing because we know that dynamic so well.
Yeah, you've got some personal experience there.
I do.
Well, thanks so much, Julie. I appreciate you sharing all of your picks for this holiday.
Yes, and thank you, Danny, and have a wonderful, wonderful holiday break.
Again, that was author Julie Buckles talking about some of her recommendations for books and movies to take in over the holiday break. When we come back, guest and career coach Marty Nemko talks about how you can take a break from any holiday stress you've been feeling in the last several weeks. I'm Danielle Kading, and this is Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. For some, the holidays can be a time to unwind with family and friends and take time for some of the more important things we miss out on in the hustle and bustle of the rest of the year. For others, the season can be fraught with stress as people run from one holiday event to another. Marty Nemko is a 30-year career coach, author, and frequent contributor to Psychology Today, NPR, CNN, and other media outlets. He also teaches at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. He offered his thoughts on why people stress during the season of giving and what they can do about it. The holiday season is pretty stressful for a lot of people at this time of year. So why is that? Why do people get stressed out around the holiday season, Marty?
Well, there's always multiple reasons, but certainly the two big ones are the expectations for family, and there's going to be this, we have this this image of Christmas, Norman Rockwell image still, despite the tremendous change. So there's, one is the heightened expectations. Two is the spending, that all the need for presents. And three is all the events you've got to go to that you've got to be perky and perfect, and you'd really sometimes, especially if you're an introvert, rather not go. So those are the three big sources.
And I bet a lot of people aren't feeling that perky or, at the top of their game if they're running around a lot at this time of year.
And especially if you're in northern Wisconsin, and, you know, there's a lot of people with seasonal affective disorder. The lack of sunshine really exacerbates whatever the environmental problem is that would be otherwise plaguing people even in Beverly Hills, California.
Yeah, well, and we would all like to see a little bit more sun around northern Wisconsin. But as far as events and gatherings we see, whether it's at work or, you know, parents running their kids to holiday concerts and, you know, why is it so hard for people to say no around this time of year?
Because we are all motivated by some level by what could positively be described as a sense of responsibility or in a negative sense by guilt. But both are both sides of the same coin. We feel we are not just uncivilized animals who just go for what we want and get our food and get our whatever we want. We feel this sometimes sense to be self-sacrificial in the service of family members, friends, or professional networking. Oh, I better go to that office party, or I might be the next one laid off, or, gee, I'm looking for a job. I better go to all that crap. So we are governed by more than selfish desire, and that causes anxiety.
Well, so how do people balance that then, you know, and pick and choose which events, you know, maybe are worth it and others that they can let slide?
Correct. But sometimes the problem comes only when people end up being so overwhelmed by one factor or the other. Either, you know, screw them. I really don't like going to that stupid family party anyway, so I'm not going to go at all. Even though it probably, in a cosmically wise sense, it would make sense for them to go. So like everything else in life, it's boring but true that balance matters. So if everybody simply, you know, made a rational judgment about where is the greatest benefit to the universe and to myself for the effort involved and only did that, then it wouldn't be an undue source of stress. It would just be kind of a normal one. It's when people either go to all of them because they are unusually guilt-driven, or if they're unusually selfish and they go nowhere and they become kind of hermity about it and then they're viewed as the wayward uncle or aunt, that's when it becomes a source of stress for not you, but for everybody else who gets annoyed. How could she not come to the family Christmas?
Well, what about that guilt, though? I mean, you know, I feel like at this time of year, people feel more of a desire to reach out and share time with others. But at the same time, it's called the season of giving, right? So if you withdraw from that, you know, it seems like that would provoke that guilt.
I think there's a reason why the Charles Dickens book, A Christmas Carol, has endured and been created in so many versions of plays. There is a Scrooge in every one of us, both sides. We may feel like, you know, the world has screwed us during the year. I'm sick and tired of it. I don't need, you know, this season of giving crap. To hell with it. I'm going to go and get my just desserts, and I'm getting people nothing for Christmas or whatever. Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever, Ramadan or whatever you want to use, the end of year, winter solstice. Screw them. This is going to be my retribution. Or I'm going to be more mild about it. Well, I'm just not feeling up to it. But subtly, there's some of that feeling like I'm not such a social animal, and damn it, I'm not going to be any more social animal than the introvert that I am. So screw them.
Well, and it seems like there's a lot of societal standards that play a role in that, too. You know, I mean, especially with family. I mean, we're brought up from a young age to, you know, hug your grandma or grandpa, right? And do what you can for your family. So, you know, I hear about friends who take vacations during Christmas, and I'd like to be one of them. But how can you go about that? I mean, how do you get over that guilt?
So you really, you know, in the end, we're going to come back to moderation on all this. So if your family's tradition really is one of great tightness, and for you to go to Hawaii would engender such resentment and strain the fabric of your family and misery, maybe you need to buck up, kid, and, you know, show up and don't be just obnoxious. Don't just bury yourself in the food and gain 10 pounds. Be social. You know, you're a human. You're a grown-up. Sometimes you just have to buck up. But other times, let's say the family really has been really unfair to you. They've been really miserable to you, and they're really not that close to family. You say, you know, damn it, they want me to come, but the world won't end. If I don't come, it won't be World War III. I'm going to Hawaii. So it really is one size does not fit all. It depends.
Well, and do you think, too, that people may presume or make assumptions that it's going to be harder than it really is?
Sometimes. But, you know, but we are right now in the United States of America in the most polarized time, probably certainly in my lifetime that I can remember. So, you know, these parties tend to go long. So in the first hour, everybody's on their best behavior. They're saying nice things. They're drinking champagne or eggnog, which is disgusting. I don't know why anybody likes that. But in any case, they're small talk. They're talking about the family and the vacation and pop culture and if they're religious, they're talking about church or whatever the hell it is. But after an hour or so, that begins to wind down. And in our polarized society, it almost comes up, it bubbles out something about Donald Trump, about hating him or liking him, or you don't understand, you're judging him by his policy, by his personality, not his policies, and it can be explosive. So even if it doesn't come up, everybody's on their best behaviors. They're walking on tenterhooks. So it can't be the turkey's very good this year, what lovely ham. No, it can be fraught. which can have long-standing repercussions, because if there is a blowout fight about Donald Trump or any other political thing these days, it can have long-term repercussions long after the ho-ho-ho is going bye-bye-bye. So, but of course, you know, in an ideal world, and this could be sanctimonious wishful thinking, but if everybody can realize that we are in polarized times, and whether you're a Christian or not, the notion of Christian love is not a bad thing to keep in mind as we're talking about Donald Trump. And being statesman and stateswoman-like in your conversations, realizing that there really are legitimate grounds for hating Donald Trump and his policies domestic and international, and there also are legitimate bases for supporting many of Donald Trump's policies, although not his personality. And keeping that statesman and stateswoman-like hat and asking more questions than pontificating may be a wiser way to navigate the very dangerous shoals of the Christmas political waters.
Well, and I think families tend to avoid politics and religion as those two general hot-button topics. But what about religion? How does that play a role, especially around this time of year when many people are celebrating what they see as, you know, this birth of Jesus Christ, if they're Christian? So,
and I can't speak to Superior, Wisconsin, because, again, I'm in the atheist capital of the world here in the San Francisco Bay Area. But in general, we certainly a neutral, or not, they're not neutral, but a relatively respected national body called the Pew Center for the Study of Religion did a study a year or two ago and found that the fastest growing religion is no religion. And again, I don't know if that extends into the heartland of northern Wisconsin, but we have to respect that there are a lot of people who have come to the conclusion that God does not exist. And there are two kinds of atheists. There are those that are the missionary atheists who try to ridicule anybody who's a believer. And then there are the respectful ones. And if you have the misfortune of being at an event, if you are a person of faith and you are at a party with one of those zealous atheists, you really, you know, those kind of views are, again, are ossified, hardwired. And so it's wise to probably, you know, there's a lot of mobility at these parties. Walk over to another group of three or four. If you're already at the table, don't fan the flames of that. Probably try to either be non-responsive or make some kind of, again, I like the word statesman and stateswoman. You know, something like, I'll make an example, because I am an atheist, truthfully. But if I were to say, if somebody were to be mean-spiritedly demeaning of religion, I would probably say something like, you know, I am well aware that religion has done a lot of ill to society, that we think of how many wars and how much death has accrued because of religion. And yes, it can make one too passive if you simply believe literally that the meek will inherit the earth and all we need to do is feel gratitude and love. That leads to a sense of, you know, of inaction. That said, most people find religion a tremendous source of comfort and community, the notion that there might be a hereafter, and certainly guidelines to live by. And no one could argue with the fact that churches do a lot, local churches do a lot of good for people. So I think we probably are wisest if we could take a moderate stance here and respectfully agree to disagree. If I were to open my mouth at all, and I'm not sure that would work well, but that would be the kind of attempt at statesmanship that I would try to impart.
Well, we've got the Christmas holiday coming up this weekend and then New Year's after that. Do you have any advice for, you know, stressed out parents or for family members as they're getting ready to maybe meet up with family or loved ones over the holiday?
I think we need to turn to the gift thing, because first of all, I wanted to more directly answer your question. Very often there are fights about who doesn't get invited. So be generous in that sense. Err on the side of inviting more people. If you have to spend a little more money on food or alcohol or whatever, then do it. But I think you can reduce some stress by, in general, inviting more people. But if there's somebody you know is incendiary, who is going to potentially ruin the event for everybody, you might consider talking to that person privately, maybe even if they're local, having coffee with them or a drink, and saying you're a little concerned, you'd love to have them at your party, but you, looking back at past Christmas parties, saw that there was a number of disruptions when the topic turned to blah, whatever it is, and I'm wondering, Uncle Joe, or Aunt Mary, what do you think? Do you think you should come? Do you think do you think there is a way to keep things from blowing up this time? So I'd probably make that preemptive attempt to avoid a nightmare occurring, and that can reduce stress.
And on the gift front,
yes,
for people who might be doing last-minute shopping?
I'm kind of constitutionally a moderate, but on this I'm kind of a radical leftist. Again, I don't know enough about the economy in northern Wisconsin, but if you're more than about 25 or 30 years old, you probably have everything you need. And so the notion of buying more crap that people don't need feels wasteful. It feels far wiser, in my judgment, to make a donation to all of your, and it's so much easier than doing all the shopping, even if you're shopping on Amazon, which is infinitely easier, no question. But even for children, I have young grandchildren, and they have every damn toy in the world, and they're ever eager for a new one that they play with for 5 minutes. It teaches the wrong kind of consumerist values. I really do believe that the meaning of life, especially around the holidays, resides in contribution, relationships, creative outlet, all those good things, the music of the holidays. And the more we make it material Christmas, not only are we violating what Jesus probably would wish we would do, but it feels cosmically wrong. So I would invite people, even with children, to either pick one charity that they love the most or think is going to make the most good for the most people and give donations in their name, even to the children as a way of starting them to have a consciousness of giving and not being overly selfish. I'm not about 100% giving. There is room for taking care of yourself. But I think the Christmas holiday is a particularly good time to inculcate a value of sharing. We started our conversation today by calling it the season of sharing. Well, bingo. That's my view about that, and that will save you a hell of a lot of stress, even if you're shopping on Amazon. But God, if you're foolish enough to try to drive to the mall and sit there waiting in traffic to get to the mall and then to find a parking spot, and then you go into these crowded stores where you're getting pushed around like a sardine, and then, of course, they don't have what you really want in the right size, you can save a lot of stress by de-gifting.
Well, is there anything else I'm missing, Marty, that you want to add or share with our listeners?
Amid all this piousness, I do want to say that it really is nice, especially for workaholics like me, for the last few days before Christmas and then between Christmas and New Year's to slow down a bit. We do have 365 days to be as hard a worker as you want to be. But if you've got the luxury of being able to take a few days to do something a little different, take a longer hike, even a winter hike, than you would have, play more with your dog, decide to write in your journal, paint something, watch a good long movie that you said, I wouldn't want to watch a three-hour movie, that's too long, but this great three-hour movie that you want to watch. Slow down a bit for a few days, reflect a bit. Maybe you look at every aspect of your life, your career, your relationships, money, children, religion, hobbies, whatever. Inventory your life. Year-end is a good time to do that, and do it slowly. I do have to say one other thing, and this is pious. I am here in California. Recreational marijuana is being legalized as of January 1st, and I have just the client who just left here really goes to a lot of these rock festivals, and the amount of drugs that get used there is terrible. And I have seen tremendous negative impact of drugs on people's memory and motivation. I'm a career counselor. And I've seen it devastate people, especially if they start young. So the holidays tend to be a time when people say, hey, let's celebrate, whether it be with alcohol or drugs. So I would, at the risk of sounding like an old fart, urge that maybe, just maybe, this is the time to find your joy in relationships, in creative outlet, in the amazing holiday music, Christmas music that exists, and not with drugs.
Or at least a moderation, not taking it to excess if we have some drinkers out there.
Certainly a step in the right direction. I'm sorry if I sound pious, but I pride myself on trying to be as authentic as I can. And that was you asked me if that's another thought. That was my final thought that was going through my head.
I appreciate it, Marty. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I wish you a very good holiday.
You too. Restorative or exciting or whatever it is you want to do. I do. We all celebrate it in different ways.
Again, that was Marty Nemko, career coach and a frequent contributor to Psychology Today, CNN, and NPR. And that's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. You can also find us online on our Facebook page at facebook.com/KUWSFM. And you can find us on iTunes under Hear Me Out. You've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us again next week. Until then, have a very Merry Christmas.